I'm comedian, writer, and filmmaker Chuck Staton from the punk band Senior Discount.
And I'm writer and comedian Brad Rohr from the Providence Improv Guild.
And this is the Chuck and Brad Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 531 of the Chuck and Brad Podcast.
I'm Chuck.
I'm Brad.
How you doing, Brad?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah?
So last week we had Ray on. We had an episode that people seem to really like. A lot of people messaging me on Instagram and commenting about it. And thank you everybody who enjoyed our Pitch Doctor segment where Brad, Ray, and I each brought our own pop culture mashup movies to the table. By the way, I wish we called it pop culture movie mashup as opposed to IP.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's less well known, but that's right. My fault. I won't make that mistake again.
Good.
Next time I use IP in something, be like, you fucker, you said you would use pop culture.
Okay.
Thank you. But I did want to say, so here's what happened. We said, let's do this episode. We'll talk about a bunch of things, and then we'll get into this pop culture mashup idea. And Ray came on and we did it and we looked at the recorder at the end and we were at like 3 hours and 4 minutes.
That's a lot of minutes.
So what I did was I went into the episode and I edited, took everything out. But what I took out, we saved for this week. Well, some of what I took out.
Right.
I cut out about 35 minutes, but I saved all of our listener emails that we answered last week with Ray.
Right.
So right now we're going to go to our listener emails with Ray that we answered last week. So get ready for another appearance by Mr. Ray Harrington.
Ah, so great.
A great comic from Rhode Island, who lives in Rhode Island, tours all over. And but before we do that, we just want to remind you, if you are in the Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut area, Chuck and Brad are returning to the stage. We're finally doing a live show after the pandemic. We're going to be returning to the Comedy Connection in East Providence, Rhode Island to do our show. The Dark Knight, Bradley Drawn.
And it is Bradley Drawn.
Oh, yeah. Brad's going to redraw every scene from the movie The Dark Knight, and I'm going to write a new narration of the movie based on his drawings. It's going to be a great show. We've done it before with Jurassic Park, The Avengers, Spider-Man, Back to the Future, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It's a great time. It's going to be Sunday, August 15th, live at the Comedy Connection with stand-up from Ray Harrington, Katie Arroyo, and John Tilson.
Yep.
Very fun time. All info is at chuckandbradpodcast.com. You can get your tickets at ricomedyconnection.com. And of course, chuckandbradpodcast.com will lead you there for the tickets.
Right.
But please come out. We're trying to make this a big, great return to the stage. It's a lot of fun. If you've ever been to one of our shows, this one's not going to disappoint. Hope you guys come out. All the comics are great, and it's going to be a great time. Again, chuckandbradpodcast.com for all info.
Correct.
And now here are our listener emails with our buddy Ray Harrington. All right. We did a bonus episode earlier this week because we missed an episode 2 weeks ago when I was in the ER. I'm all better. Bonus ep was great. We found a lot of lost emails because someone alerted us that a bunch of our emails had gone to our spam folder. Did I tell you about this?
No.
Yeah. Someone wrote and they're like, hey, I'm sending two of my email because I've written you guys a bunch of times and you've never read my email. I don't know if it's going to your spam folder. And half of our write-in stuff was in our spam folder.
Uh-huh.
So we did a whole episode of just answering that. Let me see if I have anything new since then.
Just like a bunch of emails that are so old. That it's just like 2020 is looking to be an awesome year. Like, what are you guys going to do?
I know.
Can't wait to see you guys out touring or something.
This is a new one that came in on Sunday. And I screenshotted this because I thought it was fun. But it's from our buddy Little Jack, who writes in a lot. Subject line, theme song. Little Jack says, I like how your theme song sounds like you're going to stab me in the kidneys and kidnap my girlfriend, and then the podcast starts and you're scared of nighttime parking lots and any sort of confrontation. God bless you, Little Jack Films. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think that one of the things that was easy for us is like, hey, Chuck's in a band. Let's use one of those songs.
Was you saying that.
Yeah, that was me. You know, it was me with a crown on and looking at my own rings.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we chose it. And it's also an instrumental. And also, one of the reasons we picked the theme song is that it has the two trumpets in the beginning. And it's so specific that I'm like, oh, I remember we talked about it. We're right. Like, that's a good sound to start with because it'll always sound specific to someone as opposed to like, you know, in a punk rock band. If it was just a riff of some kind, there's a lot of stuff that sounds like this. But the two trumpets are very specific. But does I never thought of the theme song as sounding like we're aggressive. Do you think that?
But that's because I know you.
Yeah.
Remember when you wrote it, where you're like, oh, we want a little cowboy in there. Yeah, and, yeah. And that's the
little
the,
cowboy. I mean, it's begging for a whoosh
yeah.
at the very beginning.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It is cowboyish.
And
selling some chili.
So, yeah, some old, a flavor of old against me in there. And yes, and so to me, I think of it as like a Western, like a wagon trail or a wagon, like a convoy that's slowly, slowly picking up speed.
Yes.
And less about stabbing anyone in any body part.
Right. But yeah, I guess it does sound ostentatious and like, we're bold. We're here.
Right.
It's true. We can't argue with that. Another email from Mike Noren. He wrote in last week and said that we got to do an episode where we go through all the Ernest movies for our franchise flashbacks. And he followed up with, since the time I sent this email, they announced they're making an Ernest documentary entitled The Importance of Being Ernest. Is that true? Or do you think he's just being a jokester?
That sounds like a jokester-y thing. But it very well could be. But I mean, The Importance of Being Ernest is a novel.
Yeah, I know it is. Zach Galifianakis had a joke in his Purple Onion special about it. Hmm. He said, I love the Ernest movies. Except for The Importance of being Ernest. And then it was like, he's too full of himself. Which is a great joke.
It's on Kickstarter.
Really?
Yeah, The Importance of Being Ernest documentary.
Wow.
So far, 957 backers have pledged $76,000 to bring this project to life.
Wow.
100% funded, time for stretch goals.
Wow.
Oh, shit.
Wow, that's crazy. Interesting. I mean, I'd love to watch that. I'd also
the
love
downside
to...
is no Jim Varney.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get Jim Varney talking in this thing other than like old footage.
I was going to say, well, maybe there's some recovered footage. How about that?
I bet it's just going to be like mostly clips of the direct-to-video Ernest movies that kept going. Like, I think people only know Ernest when they think of Ernest, it's like three movies, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe four. Goes to camp, scared, stupid, saves Christmas, prison, right? Goes to jail.
And then there's other ones. There's like
there's a ton. Like goes to Africa, which I'm like, no. Let's not do this one, Jim.
There's also Jim. Slam Dunk Ernest.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing in the rule book. It doesn't say you can't have an Ernest on your team.
When you came on and you started doing Ernest impressions, oh god, that was one of my favorite moments of this year in the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. That was great. But yeah, there is a part of me that wants to see Ernest Goes to Africa because of just like
I bet. You don't think that
there's going to be finger like indents on the side of my chair watching it where I'm gripping so hard like going Jim.
Just real quick, the summary for Ernest Goes to Africa, the IMDb summary. Goofy handyman Ernest P. Worrell, played by Jim Varney.
I'm in so far.
Wants to impress Renee Loomis, played by Linda Cash, the object of his affection, and buys some jewels at a flea market.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to Ernest, they are extremely valuable stones taken from an African statue. After Ernest makes the jewels into a yo-yo.
Oh, no.
Chuck just spilled his drink.
Walk the dog.
Thugs abduct both him and Renee, bringing them to Africa.
Wait, hold on. Thugs.
I didn't write this summary.
I know. Yeah. Thugs.
Look at these thugs. Say, fellas, where are we going?
It's funny because if you were like, oh yeah, Ernest goes to Africa, he steals these important royal jewels and turns them into a yo-yo. That's like the parody version. It's like too far. Yeah. It's not really. It like seems crazier than what he would do.
Soon, Ernest is running amok around the continent as he attempts to rescue Renee and avoid getting himself into even more trouble.
I want to see.
Please tell me that there's no still. I'm going to say this out loud. This is not my mind. This is me thinking of this because it's completely inappropriate. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is he in a big pot of boiling water?
Let me see.
Are they going to cook him up? Are they going to cook him up?
I'm going to look at images.
Does he have a radish in his mouth?
I love the idea of like Ray has to do a comedy night for the NAACP.
Oh no!
He has to watch them screen.
Wait, what is it? You said, "Oh no."
I think Ernest is in blackface, guys.
No,
it's hard to tell. It's hard.
Oh, yes, he is. Yes,
he is. Tan in Africa.
Oh, that's not a tan. That's not a fucking tan.
He's not in blackface.
No.
All right, here's one of him being threatened with a machete.
Uh-huh. Ernest would never do blackface. It was an accident.
Smash cut too. Yes.
Oh my God, this one's really bad.
Oh God. So I need to see this movie now?
Oh yeah.
And I'm also just picturing putting Ernest in other movies now. I'm really just envisioning.
Oh, yeah. Like, man, if only we had thought of this before the IP mashup episode.
I know, because when you said, now I wish I could rewrite mine. When you said that, like, he found jewels, all I was thinking is, like, it turns out it's Jumanji. And I just pictured Ernest in Jumanji.
That's great.
Do you hear that?
Hear what?
And that's just the drums start. Oh man. Oh God.
Oh,
I want Ernest in so many different movies now. I wanna fucking put him in Fast and Furious. I don't care. I really don't care.
It's weird because, like, Ernest is
it's about family.
I don't think of Ernest as being culturally insensitive in his movies.
That's because you haven't seen Ernest Goes to Africa.
Yeah, well, he doesn't do anything in the other movies, so he doesn't make any, you know, racially charged jokes or.
Right.
He's so innocent. He's so young-minded.
Right, but that's because he never had the opportunity to. Just Ernest Goes to Africa.
Yeah.
In that time period, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
Oh.
I would like to watch all the Ernest movies together to see if there's maybe something we missed, because...
A key to the whole thing.
Well, it's just interesting. Like, is there some kind of running thread?
He predicted 9/11.
At least links them in some way.
Wait a minute. Where was Ernest on 9/11?
He was dead.
Ernest did 9/11.
No, he wasn't dead. He was in Toy Story 2, wasn't he? Was he in Toy Story 2?
I don't know.
No, he wasn't in Toy Story 3. I know that. All right. Anyway, I'd love to watch him. I hope the documentary gets made. From Daniel T, written in yesterday.
So back it.
It looks like
put
it
your
is,
money
it,
where
it
your
looks
mouth
like
is.
It's funded and yeah, over.
Stretch goals, man. Okay. Stretch goals. If they hit, I think the second stretch goal is they will show in its entirety the blackface scene from Ernest
the unedited.
To Africa.
Yes.
And then oddly the deleted scene where he's in full blackface for Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yes.
from the precursor Ernest Ruins Christmas. All right. Write an email from yesterday. So from Daniel T, he writes, what would bother you most? This is a strange email. I read this already. I don't want to go into personal reasons. I was thinking along these lines, but I was, okay. I was curious what you would say. Chuck, if you found out someone whose opinion you trusted thought you were either a shitty writer, a shitty musician, a shitty comedian, or a shitty videographer, which of the four would bother you most?
Ooh.
Same question, four. Brad. What skill of yours would it bother you most to have denigrated by someone close to you? Same thing for Ray.
Uh-oh.
I think, you know what, the one I care about the least is music.
Okay.
Because I think music is such a specific art form where people are really either defensive or they just don't like genres. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like other things are not quite as, I mean, I guess.
Comedy? Comedy's like super.
Yeah, but it's not so genre different. It's not like there's a disco version of comedy.
Oh, I beg to differ. I think you could.
We're talking about Ernest
on the podcast. Out most of comedy.
Really?
I mean, comedy has genres for
comedy
sure.
Comedy has genres, but not in the same. It's like, it's weird because like you can't. I think you can't find a disco equivalent of something that is like this was a flash in the pan. This was really really popular. A lot of people liked it. It represented all these, you know, artists at a time that were super famous, and now it's kind of just simply laughed at.
Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, that was going to be my example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's right around the same time ish. Yeah. Yeah, and Andrew, I mean, he was filling arenas. He was all over the place.
Can you? I mean, this is an interesting conversation, but isn't Andrew Dice Clay so much more singular than a whole genre of music? That'd be like saying the Bee Gees.
I think there was a follow. You know, Andrew Dice Clay got big. And people were like, "Oh, I can go up on stage and say
there's a lot." There's
things.
I think the problem, I think the tricky thing that you're seeing here, Chuck, mm-hmm. is instead of a genre just being labeled a genre in mm-hmm. comedy, mm-hmm. often it is one specific comedian that kind of
inspires,
owns that identity or that genre, quote unquote. Mm. And then it goes on, like you get a bunch of copycats, or they were even genuinely working in an area where like a few people were trying to do it and they sure. just got to the first yeah. to market kind of thing.
Right.
I would absolutely say it's genre based because like, I think there were Andrew Dice Clay copycats. That was definitely happening with like Mitch Hedberg. That's a genre, right? Like a stonery, like one liner kind of chill comic. After Mitch Hedberg hit big, open mics were just filled with Mitch Hedberg copycats. I think Anthony Jeselnik is a genre. And I see comics where I'm like, oh, you're just doing Anthony Jeselnik.
It's tough though, because that's the way you describe it, I do see that as different because I don't think of genres of music being one big band and other bands just copying them. I don't think
No. I'm not saying it's that's it. I'm just saying that I think instead of people labeling a comedy thing as a genre, they label it as the thing that the most well-known comedian is.
But I guess I think of the music genre thing because of the way you describe it. It's a good reason to like kind of say, well, music genres have a little bit more variation within them, a little bit more depth to what they are. You know what I mean? Like, even if you look at like hip hop, it's really hard to be like, here's the comic version of this. It's just too, there's too much variation.
Well, I'm not saying they're parallels.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. I see what you mean. It's interesting though, because I think about things like slapstick. I think about things like different things. And those to me,
those are genres. Yeah.
Those are closer to genres than something like,
but I think like,
Mitch Hedberg.
I think it's not identical.
Like, I understand.
The ventriloquist kind of comedy, I'd say that's a genre, right? Sure. There's a bunch of Terry Fader, I think is his name. And
Dunham.
Dunham. One, the real, like, not bad as in he's bad at it. He's just bad for everybody else. Jeff Dunham, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get like the blue collar comedy stuff. That's all that's kind of a genre. Yeah,
that's a genre for sure.
And then I think there is a genre. Yeah, for sure. Like when you said like hip hop, you can't point to it. Definitely. Go do, I hate the phrase, but go do a quote unquote urban room.
Yeah.
You know, that's a fucking genre.
I think for me, comedy though, like I'll put it this way. Like let's say Ron White is in the blue collar comedy like thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier to appreciate that stuff, even if it's not what speaks to you. And I think with music, I think people do gravitate towards one genre or a couple genres, stay there and then dislike this other stuff without really giving it a shot. I think comedy can be a little bit more malleable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes and no. Yes and no. Because I've seen plenty of people go to a comedy club
and turn off when they see someone of a certain ilk.
And really, oftentimes people will go to a comedy club, not all, but it's happened enough times where a couple or whoever has gone to a comedy club, usually older, and they go in and I've had comic friends tell me about this experience that they've had. I've had it maybe once or twice, but I'm fairly... I'm not confrontational. I'm not, too dirty or anything like that. So I'm not going to offend people.
Right.
Even in that case, like some older people will go to a comedy club, not look up who the comedian is that they're seeing, and really think like, oh, I'm going to see a comedy show, and this is what stand-up comedy is,
right.
And it's like the three stand-up comedians that they've seen that are all very specifically in a type, you know what I mean?
Sid Caesar.
I know, no, seriously, they'll rattle off like three, they'll be like, Jerry Seinfeld, Ellen DeGeneres, like Ellen doesn't even do stand-up anymore. What's happening here? And they'll just rattle that stuff off and they'll be like, that's what I was expecting. I'm like, well, you were expecting, the 80s, know? And that's another genre too. Like the alt genre, right? Sure. Like the 90s kind of like Janine Garofalo sort of thing. Then later with more whimsical alt, like Dimitri Martin, things like, I think there are genres in stand-up.
I think they are. It just seems a little bit more malleable. I think the average audience member,
it's just more complex.
Is like, I think they're more open to like whatever, as opposed to in music. I think that there are people who like wouldn't be at this show, but they would be at this show. Like they like someone who would go to a rock show wouldn't go to a hip hop show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at a comedy club, I think it's way more mixed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I think the difference is. So for me, music would be my answer to I don't care what they think, I think.
But which one would you care the most, right?
Which one would I care the most?
Wasn't that the question?
It's interesting because I think all this stuff is pretty subjective.
Yeah.
I guess I'd care the most about...
What were the options again?
For me, it was writer, musician, videographer, comedian.
Nothing about sexual performance.
No. So I guess videographer, maybe, because I think that you're supposed to be
able to... You just don't like the genre.
Yes. Because you're kind of supposed to be able to capture whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... If I was making horror... See, this is the thing. Let's say I was making, like, really crazy R-rated, like, horror movies. Then I wouldn't care because that's really specific.
Right.
But because I try to make stuff that appeals to a lot of people, then maybe that'd be the thing that bothers me the most. How about you?
All of them. All of them would bother me. And it's, you know, the idea of someone I care about, someone I respect, you know, saying that I'm not good or that they're being discouraging towards any of them. Mm-hmm. You know, my brother... does not care at all about my comedy, not even a little. And that is going to bother me forever. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never going to listen to the podcast.
Yep.
He's never going to come to a show. He's never going to watch a video.
Yeah.
None of that stuff. And that's...
And the
that's
cat's in the cradle. Yeah,
a little bit. A little bit. I don't know if there's a song about
little
brothers
boy
for
blue
that.
And the man
Maybe the Mormons.
When you come in home, brother. I don't know.
There we go.
Brother,
yes. Brother,
you hear your red stomach gurgling in the background.
It's Brad doing it, and you can hear the click of like an old boombox recording it.
Yeah. But yeah, it you know, I recognize comedy is subjective.
Yeah.
When if I had a friend tell me like, oh, I don't really like your podcast, I'd be like, you don't like Chuck, and then I would never ask them for details.
Oh man, there is a certain power with like a duo like that. You can just be like, it's the other guy.
Yeah,
it's the other
guy.
Oh, you mean the guy I'm carrying? Of course.
Yeah. That's why the Sklar brothers continue to do work.
I just hate his face.
Wait a minute.
And you know, with improv, it's group stuff. You know, it's I'm very rarely doing my own show.
That is interesting. So. It's funny because thinking about you as a stand up, it's like if someone doesn't like it. It's all you, baby.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. But we've talked about that on this podcast before. And I'm fine with someone not liking it if they're just like, oh, you suck or whatever, because of the subjectivity of stand up. And then also like the idea of like off nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being a comic long enough and you know, working in so many different places, location wise, demographic wise.
Yeah.
Quality of show wise. Do you know how many comedy shows? Like, the only comedy show that really, really makes me mad about the idea of people not liking me is when it's a very poorly produced comedy show.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it's a show in a place that shouldn't have comedy.
Yeah.
Right. It's run terribly and the host is awful.
Yeah.
That makes me mad because
there's an amp on stage that your mic is running through.
Oh, that happens.
Yeah.
Oh, that
of
happens.
Course,
yeah. And that's what makes me mad because. Those people. Okay, this happened actually very recently. I was headlining the Woo Ha Ha Comedy Club, in Worcester, Massachusetts, a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I think it was last week. It might have been last week. I don't remember.
Was Christine Blinn on that show?
No, she was not.
Okay,
I refute. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Christine's fine. I was doing the shows there, and the club itself isn't open right now. Mm-hmm. They're doing everything. It's like a complicated mess. Like the people that own the physical building are like restaurant proprietors and they own a bunch of different restaurants in Worcester.
Yeah.
So they moved it right next door and they have it outdoors, but there was bad weather on Friday. So they put it in their bar in the corner and it was terrible. It was awful. The show sucked so bad. The people that were there, it sold out because it was like low seating, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking driving up like, oh cool, the show's sold out, that's great. And you know, Worcester is Worcester as far as like doing shows. It's not like my favorite place. Sometimes I have a really fun show, other times it's work. And this one, the setup was just awful. You know what I mean? Like, it was the PA speaker is sitting on a table right next to me. I'm talking into one singular speaker that was turned up way too loud. I had to say, turn it down. It's like, it's hurting people in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bathroom, which was like right behind people, had a like a super loud air drying thing for people's hands. That when it was on, you had to speak over it, and then somebody would like leave the bathroom so the door would open and get even louder.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it was just a shit show, and people weren't like paying attention really or taking it seriously. Yeah. And at some point I was like, you guys paid to come in here and like look on your phone. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And it sucked. And then Saturday was in the tent that's outside. They have like, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's all set up really, really nicely. It looks like, it looks a lot like outdoor dining in LA. It looked really nice.
Yeah.
It's in like a little square courtyard kind of thing. It was great. And you know what? That show, fucking awesome. Like I killed and it was super fun. And I don't like saying that, but I did. And it was fun. And I said like, man, I wish Friday was here. I wish I could go back in time and bring the audience from Friday and not even let them watch me, just let them watch you and then say, look, do you see the fun we all could have had?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's because it's only the setting and how it worked. I'm still the same comic.
Yeah.
And what kills me about that is I know there were people at that show on Friday that went home and were like, that guy kind of sucked.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
wasn't funny. It's like, no. This was never going to be funny.
Right.
You know,
the way I've kind of referred to that over the years, specifically in like filmmaking as well as whatever live stuff we do, is kind of like, it's getting rid of the distractions to get to the actual, you know, what you're going to present. The performance in this case. And so it could be anything. There could be like, you know, a dog at the front of the room kind of standing up and sitting down and standing up. Anything that is like a big distraction from what you're supposed to be there for, where someone's attention is taken away, hurts the performance of whatever it is.
Speaking of distraction, where they put the comics in the corner of the room was technically at the front of house. And so there's just big windows, floor-to-ceiling windows the front.
You're good.
And the sidewalk right there.
Yep.
And people are walking by the entire show. Yeah. I had people stop and just look through the window like fucking, like it's old-timey window shopping.
Yeah.
And watch part of the show. Do you know how distracting that is? And it's like, what is happening? And because I could see everybody's eyes.
Yeah.
Go over to the right a little bit. I'm like, they're watching that.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Like you know, when we first started doing videos for my band, before I started working with Tell 'em Steve Dave and Tuesdays and everything, we would do like stuff that was written in narrative. And, you know, we were just kind of having fun or whatever. But people that I was filming with would be like, oh, I have a funny hat I'm going to wear in this scene.
Oh, God.
And I'm the funny hat hurts the comedy of the scene because people are saying, why is he wearing that hat?
Oh, yeah.
Or
even
if someone has a cast on. If someone has a cast on that's not part of the story,
right?
That's fucking up people's attention span.
Yeah.
It's a really strange thing, but I'm with you.
We've talked about that before, too. Like one joke per joke.
Yes.
Hat on a hat, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just along the lines of your Friday versus Saturday night dilemma, I remember like meeting the friend of a woman I was interested in and I bombed with the friend. She just wasn't picking up anything I was putting down. And I'm like, I want to
stomach growling like crazy.
I wanted to say
it's his conscience.
I wanted to say like people pay to see me be funny. I'm so good at being funny that people exchange their money in order to experience my funnies.
God.
I'm giving it to you for free. Appreciate me.
Hearing that
me.
I don't like hearing that at all.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Ew.
I didn't
say it. Guess what? You just bombed in front of me.
Yeah, wow.
Get to grumbling, man.
Speaking of paying to hear Brad be funny, Daniel T, thank you for the email.
Yes.
It was followed up by Daniel going to...
What about you, Ray? Oh, I don't know.
I thought you had a big story. I thought that was your big...
Oh, no, I didn't pick like a thing.
Well, pick a thing.
I honestly... you know what I'll say? Something that I'm like really... I've put a lot of work into.
Oh,
That's when I start to get more sensitive, but more specific, like, okay, undependent, right? That's something if somebody was like, that sucks.
Yes.
That would hurt because I am.
You know, the technical stuff is good. All this was in line.
Well, not even that. Like, if I heard that, my response wouldn't be, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. My response is like, oh, you're right. Yeah. Because I don't have as much experience in that realm.
Sure.
I made Be a Man. That was my feature length film. It was a documentary, and that was the first thing I did, mm-hmm. other than like sketches.
Yeah,
and then I did Undependent, and
yeah.
So I don't have as much experience in that.
Right.
That was my first narrative thing where I'm like, we're gonna shoot the scripts I wrote, okay,
yeah.
And I'm gonna direct it and be in front of camera. All right, then I'm far less sure of myself because,
sure,
like, in stand up, if you go, oh, you fuck suck, mm-hmm. I'd be like, all right, that guy gets it, you know. I think that's a callback.
Yeah.
But that's where I would get more sensitive about something.
Yeah.
And Be a Man. No, I'm okay if somebody shits on Be a Man because it's such a specific thing. It's you either like this kind of thing or you don't.
That's pretty much how I felt about the music thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hear you. It's an interesting question. I wonder where the hell Daniel T's coming from with
this. I think something happened.
Something happened.
I think his like writing partner was,
yes,
like, this sucks.
Me too. But I wanted to say thank you to Daniel T. He immediately followed up by going to buymeacoffee.com/chuckandbrad. And bought us some coffee. So thank you, Daniel T. If you want to support the podcast, buymeacoffee.com/chuckandbrad. And you'll be able to throw us some cashola like old Daniel T.
Like old DT.
Yes. Little Jack actually wrote in again to kind of educate.
One per podcast.
To educate us. We get a lot of Fast and Furious stuff.
Good.
Last week we got an email in about like John Cena's Taiwan comments. Do you hear about this?
I did not. You hear about this, folks?
No, who are the ad wizards that came up with this one?
He referred to Taiwan as a country.
Okay.
And Brad explained to me that it was very sensitive to refer to it as a country because it was recently...
It was under like Britain's rule.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Until like 1999.
They gave it back
to mainland China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
something like that.
Yeah.
Little Jack
and
says,
you can't recognize the leader and, you know, all that stuff. It's a hot button.
Yeah. Little Jack says, please read. He sent us an email link. Please read for more information on why China does not acknowledge Taiwan as a country. This is much more than bad geography. This is a political overreach into Western media from a country attempting to silence people and their freedoms. A note, Vince McMahon has paid for all the WWE stars to learn Mandarin as he believes it is the future of the sport.
Let's do Israel next.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a whole article from Esquire called The Real Reason John Cena Apologized for Calling Taiwan a Country. Matt, we'll check that out because I really, you know, I just don't know. All right, let's see. How many more emails should I do? Should we just move on and do some more emails next week?
Let's just...
Sure.
Do you have anything about Free Tibet?
I do have some... Let me see if I should read this one. I feel bad because this guy's a great guy.
Oh, no, that wasn't a knock on him.
Yeah,
it's just it's a really complex issue.
Yes, yes.
I think the Taiwan issue is very... similar, not in its logistics, not in its actual details with Israel, but I think it's very similar in terms of how
hot that button is,
how the U.S. is perceived as supposed to respond to that, and like talking about Israel versus Palestine,
right,
and getting into that, and it's very much like, no, you just say Israel,
yes,
pro-Israel, that's what you do,
yeah, right.
Don't talk about the reality of things.
Nope.
Yes.
And I think that's the issue with Taiwan and recognizing China as the quote-unquote leadership of Taiwan and stuff.
Right.
Gets complicated.
It does. We're gonna move on from emails. We'll get back into those emails. We're not gonna let any go to the spam folder. We're gonna get them next week.
I mean, Kathmandu doesn't exist anymore.
All right, so new stuff. I mean,
more like Kathmandu.
You know, last week,
I'm shaking
people
my
pay.
Head.
Yeah. People pay to see me.
All right, that was fun. That was our email.
We are so wise.
Yeah, we really are. Yeah. All right, so we did get one more email that we want to answer on this week's episode. I'm going to be honest, we get a lot of write-in emails.
Good.
We've made a promise in the past to answer all of them on the podcast.
Regrettable.
Really bites us in the ass as our popularity increases. By the way, thank you so much for writing in. Thank you so much for caring. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate the fact that there's a community around the podcast. Tell your friends. Tell other people. when we post a new episode, if you want to share it on Facebook, retweet it, share it on Instagram, share in your Instagram stories, leave us a review on iTunes, do whatever you can to spread the word. We appreciate the people that listen. We really, really, really do. It's humbling and we really appreciate it a lot. But we're going to save some of the emails for next week, but we are going to answer one email right now. Email subject line, disappointed.
Oh, boy.
And you can write us, don't forget, at chuckandbrad@gmail.com or find the email link at chuckandbradpodcast.com.
Yes.
This person.
Disappointed.
Wrote us at chuckandbrad@gmail.com.
Yep.
chuckandbrad@gmail.com. I just kind of said that a little bit.
Yeah, a little. Scrunched. Yeah, you were like Sam Narek.
I was like
from,
a French
Lord of the Flies.
Nose. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Disappointed from Logan. Greetings and salutations.
No, both of them. Okay.
Like many ants, aka Tell Him Steve Dave listeners, I first listened to the Tezzy Town histories and decided to stick around because Brad is so great. I know from years of listening to podcasts that the only time to reach out to podcasters is when you are slightly irked by something they either did or did not do, and to ignore the countless hours of joy and entertainment they provided, often for free.
Logan gets it.
It is my given right as an entitled listener to only focus on marginally negative items while we're disregarding the positive moments that far surpass the negative.
I like this guy.
I love
guy.
This guy.
He's great.
I love this guy. He's a third on our podcast. Get out of here, Ray Harrington.
Yes.
Get in the boot. Now that you know my background and clear qualifications, here is my gripe with the Chuck and Brad podcast. I finished listening to episode 530, which is our recent episode, Pitch Doctors for the Space Jam 2, where we brought our own ideas to the table.
Yeah, pop culture mashup.
Pop culture mashup. And was disappointed by the end that the end song was not Smile, as it features the Space Jam theme.
That's on me.
My band Senior
Wait,
Discount.
Wait, no, that's not on me.
Wow. Oh, hold on. I'm going to defend myself. As a, you know, if you don't know, if you're not familiar with the show, I have a band called Senior Discount. And we kind of just close the show with a random song every week from my band. And the song Smile, a long time ago, we decided just to replace the original opening with the lyrics from Space Jam.
Right.
Just as a fun thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, randomly week to week, of course, we put a random song in. Here's why I didn't end last week's episode about Space Jam with Smile, which includes a Space Jam intro.
Right.
Here's why. Because I was desperate, Logan, desperate to get our podcast running time under 2 hours.
Oh.
And it's like 1 hour, 59 minutes and 36 seconds.
Nice.
Right. Like I said, we were doing an episode and it was like over 3 hours long. So I was cutting, chopping. Right. And, I was like, oh man, I'm like, it was already over an hour and 59 minutes when I was getting to the end and I could put a song in because I'm the one that edited it last week. And so I just chose the shortest little outro segment of a song that I could to put it in. And if I had thrown the Smile with Space Jam in there, it would have been like two hours, 3 minutes, which just, I think, comes off as more intimidating to listeners than 1 hour and 59 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, did I make the right choice? That's up to, who knows? That's up to Logan Davis. And he says, maybe not.
All right.
But I hear you, Logan. You have a good case. I should have put that in. He says, I know it may have been a bit on the nose to end the podcast in which Space Jam was discussed with this particular song, but I was disappointed that it wasn't and felt the obligation to let you know of my disappointment.
I wouldn't have thought of that. Because in my mind, I'm like, do they still open with Space Jam and still do Where Is My Mind as the breakdown, or did it change and now you do Jesse's Girl as the breakdown?
Yeah.
You know, there have been a couple different iterations. I don't know if that was the song where you sang the Big Mac jingle at some point or if that was a different song.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Senior Discount, your band, all over the place. A lot of pop culture references in there.
Yeah, right. Yes, I know, it's true. And maybe I should have put it in there. Maybe I should have kept it.
You guys wrote that song, My Heart is a Mogwai for You. It's all Gremlins theme.
Why for you? What does that imply about the future? It doesn't bode well.
Don't get my heart wet. Don't feed my heart after midnight.
Yes, right.
You can get my heart wet. That's fine. More hearts.
But Logan, thank you for the email.
Yeah.
And thank you everybody who wrote in again, chuckandbrad@gymail.com if you want to write in and tell us what you think.
We will answer some of the emails that were sent recently. We'll just answer them next week.
Because
we don't want to make another all mail episode.
We just did a whole mail sack episode where Brad and I, you know, We unzipped and looked at our mail sacks and saw what we saw, and we did a whole episode of our mail sack.
This just gets worse and worse and worse.
We don't want to do a whole other episode of a mail sack again.
No, no. In fact, I think we should just strike that from our vocabulary.
You're the one that came up with it.
I know.
It's on the record.
I regret it. I, you know, we've all had bad ideas.
So let's move forward. We're supposed to be pop culture experts. Let's talk about some pop culture.
Let's do it.
Let's do spoiler free first.
Okay.
Then we'll close with spoils.
Got it.
Actually, you know what? First things first.
First
the
things
Jackass Forever trailer.
Okay. You've been hyped. You've been watching this multiple times a day, every day since it came out.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I love Jackass, the TV show turned movie series, more than I love most things.
I think it was a novel first.
You know what? It was a novella.
Yes.
And then there were some short stories to extend the story.
Yep.
But I love Jackass in a way that I love very few things. I don't know. There is something magical about what Jackass is.
Yeah.
And you want to know when I almost experienced something similar?
What's that? Tell me.
Maybe this will help you. Maybe you and all your Bradley wisdom will help me figure this out.
Sure.
There's something so special about Jackass. And I think you can relate when I talk about the idea of the anticipation and excitement about watching the first Jackass, second Jackass, third Jackass movies in theaters, not knowing what's coming next,
right. But
knowing you're going to be thrilled and laughing and enthralled, right? Does it give you a weird feeling that's different than a comedy?
Yeah, I think the expectation of like the spectacle is greater.
Oh, yeah. And there's just...
If you go to see Horrible Bosses, a comedy that both of us enjoy, right. It follows...
what a comedy is.
Right. It follows the rules. Mm-hmm. But when you go see a Jackass film, it's not following a rule. It's not following a formula.
I almost feel like there's a little bit of like, just like, you're almost like anxious to see what's going to happen.
Right.
Like the end of a basketball game or a wrestling match.
Yeah.
But another time where I felt like a weird feeling that I never felt before was a combination of two other things.
Okay.
Going to see the Lonely Island live.
Ooh, okay.
It was like a combination of comedy.
Yep.
And excellent music.
Right.
And the heights were just heightened by the idea that they combined these two things where you got these two feelings of, let's call it euphoria.
Yep.
You know, when you're at the top of enjoyment of music and at the top of enjoyment of comedy, combining for this new level of something. And Jackass has created that feeling in me and that excitement in me in a way that almost nothing else has. And it's just, I think it has to do with the fact that it's pranks and stunts and you know that they're going to go so big, you know, they're going to go so far that it's weird to basically have your hands on your head, eyes open wide, jaw on the floor to see what's about to happen.
Right.
And then have that payoff in a joke
right.
or a laugh. And it's a really strange thing. There's something very special about Jackass. I think a lot, honestly, I'm not kidding when I say this. I think a lot of smart people have recognized that it's special. A lot of movie reviewers and
right.
people that are part of pop culture journalism have recognized that it's special. But I don't know that anyone has really been able to lay it out, like why it's so special or why it's different or why they feel like they've captured lightning in a bottle so specifically.
I think for a while, people like it was an easy target of like, oh, look at this. Like, how is this entertainment? Where like when it first came out, I think there was pushback from the intelligentsia, the elite saying this isn't good. Mm-hmm. And then the first movie came out and it was same thing. Like, I can't believe these guys made all this money. I think around the second movie, people started to appreciate it as being something more than
guys pulling down their pants and whatever.
Right. Shooting fireworks out of their butt.
Yeah.
And then by the time the third one came around, I think everyone was in on the joke.
Yeah.
And people appreciated it on a different level. Now, and not to say that like the flying dildo hitting people in the face is everyone's cup of tea comedically, but I think that by and large, you know, it's fully accepted and integrated into the mainstream. And you know, there are still people out there who were like, they're still making those movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's jerks about every band,
right.
every show, every movie series, every book. Like,
right.
there's jerks. That's all.
Yeah. And it's just weird. I just feel like so much of you know, culture is behind them now as, oh no, they're doing something special.
Right.
And it's interesting. And for me, I mean, I'm sure that part of it was that I was of the perfect age. You know, I was 15 when Jackass came out, the original season of Jackass.
I was 106.
Yeah, the first season. Yeah, you're 106 in 99, I believe.
Yes.
And it's funny because I liked the show and I thought it was fun, but the movies are just a different beast.
Yeah.
It's just a different level of commitment. Anyway, I love Jackass in a way that I love very few things.
Right.
And, you know, I followed all the guys over the years. I care about Knoxville and Steve-O and Pontius and Bam and Dave England and Ryan Dunn and everybody. And, you know, growing, you know, from the ages of 15 to 25 or whatever, I was buying all the side DVDs. There's a million other, obviously the CKY right. series and Steve-O's DVDs. And I love all that stuff. And I think that a lot of it is crazy. And like Steve-O's Don't Try This at Home Tour DVD, which is volume two of the Steve-O DVDs, is like insane. But nothing compares to what they put together for the Jackass movies. I think it's the combination of them not giving a fuck, wanting to go so big, caring so much about the bits, and the fact that a movie studio is like, yeah, we got to trust them because they made us so much money that they can do whatever they want.
Right.
So fuck us. you know what I mean? I think that's a big part of it, where it feels like Knoxville can do anything he wants. It could be as small as he wants and as big as he wants. The opening of number two is kind of a great example of the first bit is Pontius with his dick in that little sock that looks like a mouse.
Yeah. And the snake.
And the snake attacking it with all of them together.
Yeah.
And then right after that is the punching, the boxing glove on hydraulics on the other side of the Valentine's Day card,
right.
Which is nothing.
Right.
It's not dangerous at all. It's not painful at all. It's like a silly, fun thing. And the pair of those two back to back, this is just a magical equation. Anyway, so when they were saying they were filming a fourth Jackass movie, basically it's like hard to contain my excitement.
Yeah.
Essentially for the past like many years, because it's been 10 years since Jackass 3.
Yes.
Which is outrageous.
We saw it in theaters, I remember.
Yep.
In 3D.
In 3D.
Yep.
And I, you know, all through the years, there's been like fake trailers on YouTube and news of like, oh, are they going to do this? Are they going to film it? Blah, blah, blah. And over the past few weeks, all the news has kind of come out and it's basically like they're filming it. Bam's not going to be in it because he didn't want to abide by their, you know, drug and wellness checks.
Right.
He thinks that they're overreaching. Eventually, Jeff Tremaine got a restraining order on Bam. There's three new cast members, Poopies, Zackass, and I don't remember the third guy's name. I don't know him yet.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, they came up with an Instagram account that had some stills, including Knoxville in the air after getting hit by a bull.
Right.
And then the actual trailer dropped. Like, you know, it was like next Tuesday the trailer was going to drop. And the trailer came out. I don't know if I could have been more thrilled with that trailer. Well, how do you feel?
I'm psyched.
It's called Jackass Forever, by the way, which is like, to me, that's the perfect version of their fuck you to everybody about, yes, we're doing a fourth movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's funny too, because it's really not acknowledging it. Like to me, if they called it Jackass, like cockroach or something like that, like you can't kill us.
Right.
That would be acknowledging the idea of like, you know, people think we can't do this anymore, but just Jackass Forever is fucking awesome.
You're just thinking about the trailer and you're just like,
oh yeah.
Let me caution you right now.
Yeah.
Before we advance further.
Yes.
In an old episode of the podcast, I was talking about the Frank Turner album and how I had heard like 8 of the 13 songs before listening to the album.
Yeah.
And you said, I watched so much Jackass 3 stuff before the movie came out that I feel like I didn't get to experience the movie as a movie. So I'm cautioning you now.
Yeah.
Watch the first trailer and then try not to seek things out.
I know. Whether
it's on late night shows, on what, you know.
I know.
So I'm just putting that in your brain.
We got about 3 months.
We can make it.
Right?
Yeah. I'm psyched for that. It's weird because I think, you know, my relationship with Jackass was not as strong as yours.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it was not like, I don't think I saw the first movie in theaters. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I saw the second movie in theaters. I didn't know there was a 1.5. I didn't know there was a 2.5. By the time we went to see 3 in theaters, I was on board with these things and you bought me the book that accompanied the first movie. And
oh, yeah. That book is fucking awesome.
And I get it now.
I just bought that book on eBay again yesterday.
That's great.
I really did.
Yep. You know, I was on board with Bad Grandpa and Action Point and so, you know, I've come around and it's weird because I definitely think the person I talked about the intelligentsia and the elitists. I think I, like there's an alternate timeline where I become that person and I become the guy saying, they're still making this?
Really?
And I'm so glad that I'm not.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I'm so glad I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think the podcast has basically prevented both of us from being dicks in that way.
Yeah.
And it helped us be dicks in so many other ways.
So many other ways.
No. Yeah. But in that way of like these successful entertainers are still successfully making money entertaining in the way that they love. Oh, blah, 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 yeah. Blah. I'm looking at that in a negative way. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I hate shit like that. When someone says, Pearl Jam is still a band? Yeah, they're still selling out arenas, you fucking piece of shit working at a gas station. No offense to gas station workers. You're essential. I'm just saying.
It just happened to be. That's where, no, the conversation, I had that conversation in 2013 with a guy at church. And yeah. I'm like, aren't you the biggest Iron Maiden fan around?
Don't
come at me like this.
I hate it when anyone says, these successful entertainers are still successfully entertaining, but
right.
like as if they're beyond it. Like, dude, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I hate that stuff. Anyway, yeah, I just, it touches me in this way that's so special. And it's because what they do, you know, a big part of it is their charisma. Their, just the way they interact is a very, I'll put it this way. The same way that the cast of Happy Days worked well together,
right.
The cast of Seinfeld worked well together, and This band had a funny, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It sucks. I can't remember this word that when a group of people works really well together. It's a chemistry.
Right.
But there's a bigger word for it too. But anyway, it's this chemistry. And not only are they doing the stunts and doing stuff that's crazy and coming up with crazy ideas and funding it to the point where it's really well done.
Right.
But the charisma is there. Like at the end of the Jackass Forever trailer, when Knoxville says, like, you still got, he, first of all, Knoxville has blood coming down the side of his face.
Yeah.
With the glasses on. And he says to Steve-O, and you still got those $1 million teeth. And Steve-O takes out his tooth.
Yeah.
And smiles at him and doesn't say anything.
Right.
That is so, such a beautiful, real moment.
Yeah.
Everything about it is amazing. The trailer was so good. Shooting Knoxville out of the cannon at first and then having that alternate shot of him from the front of
right.
the wing, him coming up as an angel. Everything was so good. Everything was so crazy. The bull hit was so crazy. I'm so excited for it. I couldn't be more excited. If you haven't watched the Jackass Forever trailer, go watch it. It brings a tear to my eye. I'm not kidding.
I know. I've watched you watch it more than once.
I don't know. It's so special. And I'll say this. Let's just go in this direction for 1 minute. Then you can pull right out of it.
All right. I'm not going to be in Jackass 5.
Yeah. I wish. Oh, my God.
I'll say this.
All I'm going to say is I texted someone I know the other day that legitimately works with people like that.
Okay.
And I said, my dream is to work on Jackass. And they said, I'll see if I can make that happen.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting.
Yep.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wait, am I going to get launched?
Wait a minute.
Am I going to get hit by a bull?
This chair is pretty suspicious. Yeah. No. What I was going to say is I watch it and I see that filming and what they're doing and how they're like, our group has to come together. It's these guys. It's this crew. We came up with this idea. Let's make something funny. And that feels nostalgic to me.
Yeah.
Because I filmed so many pranks and stunts
yeah.
and segments and fun things. And so I watched the beginning of the trailer and it's like, when was the last time? And it's all showing black and white old footage of yeah. Jackass. You got together with old friends and laughed your asses off. And it treated it like a big nostalgic thing.
Right.
Then it had all the new footage.
Right.
Like it was celebrating it. Right. Now that appeals to me.
Yeah.
But why does that apply to the general public that didn't do that? Isn't that weird?
Well, part of it is just the idea of a group of friends. And then that's what you're seeing.
Do you think that the stuff that they do, even if you just were kind of friends, like regular friends with someone and didn't film stunts and didn't film pranks, somehow their antics do feel like a metaphor for your relationships and
absolutely.
The time you spent together?
Yeah.
How come?
Again, because I think you're seeing authentic friendships in between all the stunts.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and the nonsense.
Do you think that them saying, let's try this thing, is a metaphor for you and your friends maybe being like, we could jump over this fence when you're
You can jump over this fence. We can get these matching tattoos. We can get these haircuts. You know, people go through these rites of passage.
We can do this scavenger hunt.
Right.
We can do this prank at school.
Right.
Yeah, maybe enough people have enough of that
right.
that brings them to it.
Right.
It's very possible. It's interesting, too, because I do think that, you know, and like I'm sure that some people that I film with would say that this isn't true. Walt Flanagan. I do feel like when we're doing like alternative comedy stuff with Tell 'Em Steve Dave, and it's like me with like Walt and Quinn and Brian and Get 'Em and Sunday.
Right.
Or when I'm filming with Mark and Joe with Tuesdays or whatever. When we are being like, we have a camera, we're coming up with ideas, we're doing this. To me, it is the same thing as like a Jackass type of thing.
Right.
And I know because I've seriously filmed all of that different type of stuff over the years. Us being like, let's film Get 'Em, stick his head up this fake elephant's ass to fish tickets out of it.
Right.
Is not different.
Right. No.
Or even Get 'Em in this octopus. I
mean, they would have used a real elephant.
Yeah. Or Get 'Em in this octopus outfit.
Yeah.
Or even me filming with Mark in Poughkeepsie recently, where it's like, where he's like, oh, brought my own merch. Nothing sad about this. And we're kind of, you know, we're making stuff up. And I'm like, oh, go talk to this person or talk about this. Or you're still like, we got the camera. Let's be fun. Let's have some fun. Let's build something together. Let's make something cool.
Yeah.
And so even when it's something more nostalgic, like when I did the last day at Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash documentary, even when it's something like that, you're still saying, let's get our personalities together. Let's put our heads together and let's make something that people like.
Yeah.
And I guess to me that all feels the same, whether it's me filming a prank thing, whether it's me filming like a joke thing. I remember in one of the senior discount videos, you know, before I did Tell 'Em Steve Dave and Tuesday's videos, I would do videos in my band Senior Discount. And one of the jokes in one of the videos, I don't know if you remember this, is that I'm not hosting the video. It's like our old bassist, Sousa.
Yes.
Our old friend, Arcello.
Everyone is trying to, yes.
Everyone's trying to come up with their own Senior Discount video idea because we would put out videos.
Right.
And someone says, where's Chuck? And someone's like, oh, I hear he's really depressed since he broke up with his old girlfriend, or his ex-girlfriend. And then someone says something like, yeah, he must be really going through a lot if he's not here for these. And it cuts to me in my room eating chicken wings and laughing as the song she wore an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini plays. And I'm laughing with chicken wings all over my face and all over my shirt. Right.
Yep.
Now, that's a funny cutaway. You know, it's hard to explain, but visually it comes off as funny. The beats are right for a comedy joke. But it really was probably me and maybe Jordan, you know, our old buddy, my current roommate, Jordan, filming in my room and being like, or maybe even Sousa, maybe it was me and Sousa being like, all right, let's see, how do we make this funny? What's the rhythm of this? How do we do this? To me, it's the same as filming the stunt or the prank.
Weren't you singing Escape, the Pina Colada song at some point, eating chicken wings and drinking expired champagne?
That was eating a burrito and drinking expired champagne.
Sorry. I misremembered the cutaway jokes to you eating in your room.
Yeah. But all that stuff and saying, let's make a moment out of this is the same as the Jackass filming stuff. It's almost like, maybe this is getting a little bit too zoomed out, but it's like the Jackass guys making something is like a metaphor for a lot of things. And one of those things is just creating.
Right.
Creating a thing, creating a moment, creating something that people connect to. And they're just doing it in this extreme way. That's an extreme hit of what you connect to, whether, you know, if it's like Steve-O getting hit with something or Knoxville getting hit by a bull. It all feels the same to me over the years. I've been filming since 1998.
Yeah.
I started filming when I was in like seventh grade, me and my friends making music videos to Mo Money, More Problems in his room. And then eventually to The Day Everyone Fought, which was, me and my brothers and my cousins, you know, Christian and John, just fighting and having fake dummies of ourselves, to eventually the Senior Discount videos, to eventually the Tell 'Em Steve Dave videos and all the other stuff. It's all been the same thing, and Jackass feels like all of it. So I love it.
Good.
It makes me so happy. It brings a tear to my eye. Jackass forever. I can't wait. If you haven't seen the trailer, go watch it. It's, if that doesn't win
All the Oscars.
All the Chammies.
Nope.
It's going to sweep the Chammies.
And I'm the Oscars.
Yeah, and the Oscars. I can't wait for Jackass Forever. All right, let's do some spoiler-free review shit. One, Loki. Season one.
Television program streaming on the Disney Plus.
We're going spoiler-free.
Network.
Yeah.
Six episodes. Chuck and I are finally caught up.
We are.
I enjoyed it. It's weird because I think I enjoyed episode 5 of 6 the most.
Yep.
But I did. I definitely didn't enjoy it as much as WandaVision, and maybe not even as much as The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Not to say it was bad or that I disliked it. Just to say, like, by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, yeah, okay.
It's weird because here's what I loved about Loki. Again, spoiler free. I loved Owen Wilson's character.
Yes.
I loved the aesthetic of the TVA. I think Tom Hiddleston does a great job as Loki. I think they did kind of a sloppy job explaining the variants.
Okay.
Because the variants and what they are become such a huge part.
Right.
But in the beginning, they're like, if someone goes off their timeline, we take them out of it.
Right.
But it's like, well, A, what does that mean, goes off their timeline?
Right.
B, is there a second person or is it one person? They kind of imply there's a second person, but how does that work if they're taking you out of it?
Right.
It was kind of vague. And the only reason I think that that's a really big flaw is because later on it becomes really important.
Right.
And like right now, if I ask you, how does someone go off their timeline? You don't know. You don't really have an answer.
Right.
Like we saw Loki go off.
Yep.
And the only reason we know what that is because we already saw his timeline go forward after Avengers.
Right.
But in actuality, for somebody else, how do they go off their timeline?
Every choice you make. If you walk, if you're like, you know what, today I'm going to go to my car. Instead of turning left,
yeah,
I'm going to turn right.
Yeah.
And go up the stairs and around. It's a very inefficient way for you to get to your car.
Sure, sure, sure.
Better Instagram content for your 3 a.m. live videos.
Yep.
That's a choice. Now, in the idea of this series,
yeah,
maybe not a spoiler, there's a master timeline, and any deviation from the master timeline creates a variant. So if in the master timeline, yeah, you walk left and take the short way to your car, you walking right, mm-hmm, creates a different,
but here's the thing,
multiverse.
So yeah, in other words, the audience could never know what they're watching.
That's correct.
They could never know if they're watching the master timeline or someone go off.
Right.
So that could never be a story beat.
Right. Except that we've already seen the master timeline in the movies.
No, we haven't. We've only seen Loki's master timeline.
Right.
So any other character that we ever see, we will never know if they're on their master timeline or not.
No, they are, because all of that stuff happened. So in order for Hulk to be at
sure. You mean like the specific people we've seen within the specific context we've seen them.
Right.
But right now, for a new project that comes out next year.
Yes.
Could technically,
yep,
whatever Thor does, is he on his master timeline? We don't know. We'll have to see if the TVA shows up.
Yep.
Like, I don't like that it's that ill-defined.
Okay.
Is this a second one? Is this a new one? So if Thor goes to the right instead of the left, are we watching a deviated timeline? Are we watching the original timeline?
Right.
It was too, and also it's like I said, it's kind of weird in terms of like, they didn't really explain, like, does that person get replaced? Is that person immediately replaced in the timeline? Is there a second timeline where they only exist, and when they get pruned, that timeline doesn't exist anymore?
Right.
Which I guess is what they kind of say.
They're hinting at, yeah.
But it's, I thought it was kind of ill-defined. But like I said, the aesthetic was great. I think the overall idea on paper was pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's just like when it gets fleshed out, it's almost like they didn't spend enough time really explaining the rules of what that means.
Yeah.
By the end, it did feel like there were too many, and I think, you know, you said you may have liked it the least out of the three Marvel series so far.
Yeah.
By the end, it did feel to me like I felt the least like I knew what was going on. Not that I was specifically confused,
right,
but I just felt the least tied to the world.
I felt the least tied to the characters.
Yeah, tied to the characters and the rules of what was happening.
Right.
So that was weird. And spoiler free, I'm saying I think that it was more of a setup for the future.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it more in a spoiler full at the end. We'll warn everybody before we start spoilers. Let's go into Black Widow spoiler free.
All right. And again, I know we have a listener who doesn't enjoy all our Marvel talk. deal with it.
Oh, wait, no. He thinks that all we say is that it's great.
All right.
So he's going to love this episode.
Oh, good.
Right?
Black Widow, a film
set.
It's weird because it was a prequel to the most recent films, but a sequel to some other films. So it's a midquel, whatever.
It takes place between Captain America Civil War and Avengers Endgame.
Yes.
Avengers Infinity War.
Yes.
I guess, right?
And it follows,
Black Widow.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, and kind of fleshes out her story a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay, like a B.
Yeah, spoiler free. We're not going to spoil it.
Yeah,
I thought it was.
It's weird because like the action scenes were good, some of the comedy beats were good, but there wasn't a ton of drama with the main character because we know she survives this.
Yeah,
and there's not an alternate timeline version of her.
You already feel like the character. Is that this whatever this story is going to be, you feel walking in that it's a little bit weightless.
Yeah.
Because you know the character is going to survive. And not only that the character is going to survive, but that whatever story this is doesn't have that much impact on her personality.
Yeah, overall journey.
We've seen her go from movie to movie.
Right.
So it hurts that's hard for a movie to deal with in the first place. And then I thought the movie itself was okay. I thought the action scenes were okay, not super memorable.
Yeah.
Like to me, less memorable than Fast 9.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And there is a problem where basically Black Widow is like Superman in this.
Yeah. She's
like she basically would be like, oh, she fell 7 stories and hit every vent on the way down and then landed on her feet and like brushed her hair, like pushed her hair back or like cracked her neck or like maybe like wiped, dust off of her or something.
Yeah.
But she was just fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is just a person though.
Well, I'll say after I saw it, I went out and I tried to do that.
It was funny when we were talking to Gina about it.
Yeah.
Cause Gina's like, I liked it. I can't believe you guys didn't like it. And I said the thing about that. And she's like, well, she has the super serum, right? Like Captain America. Yeah. And we're like, no.
Yeah.
But then her car gets exploded a lot and she's just absolutely fine.
Yeah, her car got hit with like a rocket and then later her car got hit with a different car hit with a different rocket and tumbles down like the stairs.
To like a subway.
Into a subway station, not a subway restaurant. Although, I mean.
Delicious.
Really,
not really.
Missed opportunity.
Ray doesn't support him. Our buddy Ray.
I don't support him for different reasons.
Really?
I just don't like their food. No. It's that seemed weird because
That was weird. It's weird because like I want there to be stakes that are different character to character,
right?
So I don't want to see Black Widow go through stuff that the Hulk is fine with and be like, well, she's an Avenger too. It doesn't make any sense. I want her to have more, you know, every character should have their own weaknesses in different ways. And like one of hers is that she's just a person, just like Hawkeye.
Right.
So it's tough. Anyway, that was tough. And yeah, I felt like, I loved Florence Pugh.
Yes.
I thought she was really good. And I thought that David Harbour was awesome.
Yep.
Villain was kind of forgettable.
Yep.
Villain's plan was kind of meh.
It's bizarre.
Some of the story of what was leading up to the villain stuff was kind of weird.
I'll also say one of my big like dumb frustrations is that the name of the program is Black Widow, but like it's a Russian program based in Russia, full of Russian people.
Shouldn't it be called like Blanca? Like, you know, whatever. Yeah, you're saying like,
whatever the Russian for Black Widow is.
Yes.
Yeah. Call it that. I don't know that Blanca.
Blanca is black somewhere.
Probably.
I think so.
In Russia.
Maybe.
In Russia, Blanca blacks you. What?
Russian word for black. It's a weird thing I can't say.
Okay.
The Russians have these characters.
They do.
It says Chernit, I think.
All right.
Blanca is something, though. Anyway. Oh, maybe Blanca is white.
That sounds more correct.
Yeah, Spanish. Anyway. But you know, I don't want to shit on the movie. It's just that the Marvel movies have gotten to such a high standard that when a movie is like, oh, that was pretty good, it feels like a big disappointment. Scarlett Johansson is obviously great in general. So it's not like she was like bad in it or anything, but it was just kind of
Yeah.
I don't know.
Call it the Chernaya Vidova program.
Okay. Much better. But yeah, so I thought it was okay. There's some really sloppy stuff with the story that I can't believe didn't get cleaned up.
Yeah.
That we'll talk about in the spoiler full version.
Right.
But I overall give it like a B-, C+, which is a bum out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird because like I don't think the first Ant-Man is great. I don't love Captain Marvel. I don't like Thor 1 and 2.
Right.
And, you know, for the most part, I really like the rest of the Marvel movies for the most part. But this one is closer to those movies than it is to the, Civil War, Winter's. I thought it was just going to be like Winter Soldier.
Right.
In terms of like ground level people, you know, it's about people that can't fly, that aren't invincible.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a little bit more Black Widow-y with shooting and, you know, ground level stuff.
Yeah.
And it just felt like they were trying to make a movie that was just as big as the other movies.
Right.
When it didn't fit the character or the world or whatever.
I agree.
But that's it. Those are all spoiler frees. So I think here we'll go into spoiler fulls.
We'll do spoiler full Loki and then spoiler full.
Let's just continue Black Widow and then go back into Loki.
Okay. Spoiler full. Chernaya Vidova. Vidova, not Verdova. That's silly.
I thought the opening scene to Black Widow was awesome with them escaping their house with David Harbour and him going on the airplane wing. I was really psyched for that.
Yeah.
It felt like the beginning of like an 80s action movie.
Yes.
Loved that. I really didn't like that they were all hypnotized and that there were three components to their hypnotism. One was a gas could explode in your face and you'd be dehypnotized.
Yes.
One was controlled via a satellite that could make you dehypnotized.
Somehow, yeah.
And then on top of that, you still had a thing in you where if you smelled the bad guy's pheromones, you couldn't hurt him.
Right.
So at the end, Black Widow had to smash her face into the desk to stop her nose from smelling the pheromones.
Yep.
Which I did think that was a cool concept.
Right.
But, at, you know, next to also, by the way, there's this gas. By the way, there's a satellite. All that stuff seems too complicated to do it. They should have at least combined the gas and the satellite.
Okay.
What do you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
I thought the satellite was just saying where all the widows were.
No, because at the end she has to wait for it to finish dehypnotizing them all.
Okay.
Right? And then they all come together and they're dehypnotized.
Well, that was, the ones that came together were the ones that Florence Pugh threw a grenade covered in hypnosis juice.
What was she doing at the end then?
I thought she was downloading the location of all the widows so that this team.
Really?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I don't know.
Let me see. You keep talking about what you.
All right. So the basically we've advanced in time, and Scarlett Johansson wants to get out of the game. She's on the run from the authorities, and she goes to hide. And she's attacked by the Taskmaster.
Oh, it is that, I think, maybe. Let's see. Keep going.
She's attacked by the Taskmaster. Now, in the comics, the Taskmaster is like witty and, you know, not mute.
Oh, okay. So that's what it is. It says, before destroying the Red Room, Natasha is able to download the content of Dracov's console, which includes the locations of the widows. So she's downloading that so they can then go give the gas to them.
Yes.
I guess, I don't know. Was that her mission or was that extra?
I think she wanted to kill the guy. That was her mission.
That was her main thing.
And then anything else, you know, the idea of freeing these women from the control of anyone else.
Yeah.
Was probably, you know, mission B.
Yeah.
And the best way to achieve that would be to locate all these people.
Right. Okay. So that was my bad.
Right.
But it did seem extraneous at the end. It didn't seem like it was super clearly laid out. Like to me, if you're like, oh yeah, part of the movie was like, we have this gas. A big part of this is we have to hunt down all the Black Widows and get them to have this gas.
Right.
It didn't feel like that was part of the movie to me. Was it part of the movie?
I think the idea of I'm going to make my own choices or nobody controls my life but me.
No. I mean, this specific mission we're going to hunt down all the Black Widows and get them to have this gas.
I don't think so.
So that's why, I guess that's why it's weird because that seems important.
Right.
Almost more important than killing the guy.
Right.
Anyway. So that was weird to me. It wasn't super clearly defined. I guess I wish, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to think about this, but I guess I wish there was a little bit more of what that was. I thought it was her dehypnotizing all of them, and then they showed up at the end. I don't know. But I thought that that was a little bit ill-defined. I hated that the Taskmaster was just a little girl.
Right.
Because they took...
Like, not a great character. It was just... Yeah.
See, this is an interesting thing that I want to ask you about.
Okay.
And this is a bum out. I'm going to bum you right out. I love the Dark Avengers storyline.
Yeah, I know you do.
And in it, Norman Osborn saves the whole world from the Skrull invasion.
Yep.
And Norman Osborn, who is better known as the Green Goblin, becomes like the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something, the head of like, maybe it's like, I don't know what it's called. Maybe armor. Is there something above S.H.I.E.L.D.? I think it was S.H.I.E.L.D. And he gets the Tony Stark Iron Man tech. He becomes the Iron Patriot.
Right.
And he starts his own Avengers team that appears to the public and to the S.H.I.E.L.D. to be good, but in actuality, they're bad.
Right.
They have Venom pretend to be Spider-Man, Dakin, Wolverine's son, pretend to be Wolverine. And I love the Iron Patriot, and I love that storyline, and what a great storyline. In Iron Man 3, they were like, War Machine is now the Iron Patriot because they painted his
armor
red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's weird. We went to go see the movie. Has nothing to do with the actual Iron Patriot storyline that is, you know, well-known and has been around for years. And they just... So to me, tell me what you think. Why is that used when they're not actually using that at all?
I mean, to sell merch.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
But so to me, whatever they did with that is what they did with Taskmaster.
Yeah.
They're like, people know that Taskmaster is a villain.
Yep.
Here's a new villain. Yep. It's the Taskmaster. Then you go see the movie and it's like, it's not really the Taskmaster. Right. You just use the name you know.
It sucks. Like the idea of having to fight a mimic who can fight using any strategy of anything they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And this mimic uses Black Widow's own moves.
Yeah.
And then also like the Captain America shield throw. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of it. It's like she should watch other people fight. Like that. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Because if you can, like the idea of having to fight someone who can fight in your precise style is a big idea. Mm-hmm. It sucks. There's a book that has a character who can see what you're going to do before you do it. They can see the possibilities and then they can see all pre-crime. The possibilities. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's like 3 seconds worth of pre-crime. Mm-hmm. And so the way...
I did a little pre-crime before... Well, you said 3 seconds worth of pre-crime. So...
The way the protagonist won was by reacting to the move. So they weren't planning their own moves. They were reacting to the bad guy's moves. So the bad guy couldn't see what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's book one in a 3-book series. So I hope I'm not spoiling it. I'm not saying the name of the series or anything. So, mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, man, how is she going to defeat this Taskmaster who can fight equally as good as her? And... it didn't seem like it was a challenge. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like she was ever taxed to the utmost of her ability in defeating this person who could fight just as good as she could.
The character never became more of like...
They were never a threat.
This is a henchman that's following you. Yeah. Don't forget, a guy's following you.
Yeah. Oh, it's not a guy. Yeah. It's a lady.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't... I mean, it's funny because I didn't grow up with Taskmaster.
Right.
So there are some people I know, well, Flanagan,
boy,
who are way more pissed off about this than I am. So because I'm not... privy to it, but it felt to me exactly like Iron Patriot, the Iron Patriot thing, where I'm like, this character is part of this huge story arc where he's the head of this story arc and it goes into all these directions and it's fucking Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Why are you using that name to be like, look at his paint job?
Yeah.
And that's what that Taskmaster felt like.
Yeah.
It basically, you know, Taskmaster in Black Widow was just like, this person's wearing this outfit.
Yes.
And it could have been like, they could have been like, this is a new guy person, the masked fighter.
Yeah.
And it could have been like a ninja person and then they demask it and it would have been the same story.
Right.
Why did they use a character that's well known and then use none of what that character actually is?
I don't know.
That's not good. And then also I wasn't in love with that storyline where she's like, yeah, I killed him. Yeah, I killed his daughter. I guess I had to. And she's kind of torn up about it.
Right.
The fact that at the end, it's like, I had to kill the daughter to kill him. And she's like, you know, now the daughter's there. She survived, but she's deformed. And the guy was totally fine.
Yeah.
that's a little bit weird.
It is.
Because it's like, well, what was this? Like, first of all, how good of an assassin are you if you make that sacrifice but don't even hurt your main target,
right,
and then severely injured this 12-year-old girl in the process and be like, it was a necessary evil to do the real evil. It's like, well, you didn't even do the real evil.
Right.
So there was just a lot of stuff that felt weird. And, you know, falling through the sky at the end seemed so cool in the trailer.
Yeah.
They just didn't do it, give it a lot of justice. There was like a 10-second part of it that I thought was really cool.
Right.
But what they advertised in the trailer was the guy skydiving after her with machine guns.
Right.
And that didn't even happen, really.
No.
It didn't. It just was so short and so quick. And like I said, I think it was hurt by the fact that we knew it was kind of weightless. So like, right, it almost had bigger shoes to fill.
Yeah.
So I was pretty disappointed. But still, it was a fine action movie. Like, in terms of like a big summer action movie, you'd walk out and be like, yeah, that was all right.
Yeah.
But we're just used to so much more from this company.
That's true.
So it's tough. Now let's go spoiler full on Loki.
Loki.
Loved Alligator Loki.
Alligator Loki was great. The big bad at the end was Kang the Conqueror, explaining the multiverse, the multiversal war, and saying, if you kill, I understand you're mad at me, but if you kill me, which go ahead, if you kill me, I've got 3 seconds of pre-crime. If you kill me, then one of the other Kangs from the multiverse is going to come here, and some of them are terrible. And
that's not what I got from it.
Okay, that was what I got from it.
What I got was basically like, the other Kangs I dealt with were like evil.
Right.
And you don't even know what kind of evil could come,
right,
from a million versions of anybody coming.
Right, okay.
Is that what you felt too?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, except okay. I thought he was specifically referring to himself.
To me, he was like the devil you know versus like an infinite amount of devils. Didn't he say that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's so I to me, it was like, you could deal with another Thanos. You could deal with another Hulk.
Okay.
You know what I mean? As well as maybe Kang.
Yeah.
Which is what happens at the end, sort of. Like I said,
Alligator Kang.
Yes. Like I said, by the end, I felt the least comfortable in the world.
Yeah.
I liked some of the... I love the TVA stuff.
Right.
I love the TVA aesthetic. Honestly, I wish they had no budget and they had to stay in the TVA the whole time. Wouldn't that have been awesome?
It would.
It was all dialogue based. Yeah. Owen Wilson was great. Can't believe we never got him on the jet ski.
Yeah.
How bizarre is that?
Season two.
Yeah, maybe. But I loved at the end that he's like, you can either take over and rule the multiverse and do this yourself, or you can kill me. And Loki's like, let's think about this, leading towards let's take over.
Right.
And Sylvie not wanting to do that. I really like that a lot as an idea. I thought the guy that played Kang the Conqueror, who is it?
I don't know his name. I thought
he was pretty great.
I thought it was really great.
I thought he was pretty awesome. I really liked it a lot. I don't know. I thought he was great. I thought the way that he played that role was pretty cool. And I bought it too. But yeah, the variant thing is weird. It's just like, for me, they just didn't explain the rules.
Jonathan Majors.
Yeah. For me, they didn't explain the rules enough. So I didn't get if like, were they saying every time someone goes off the timeline, we kill them?
Yeah, we prune them. Or maybe it's a significant amount off the timeline. Because the idea of...
Could you get someone... So if someone ever does anything a slightest bit off, they kill them.
I think it has to be leading to something large. Like if you turn right and go to your car, maybe that doesn't make a big deal. But if you turn right and...
But does that make another timeline?
Well, it makes a timeline for that short amount of time, but because it's such a small change, it drifts back to the center.
So,
timeline.
Are there two of me or just one of me?
I think there's two of you for that moment, and then you merge when you get to.
They never showed anything like that,
right?
That's what's tough.
Well, this is me hypothesizing. I don't know. We've had a lot of trouble with time travel on this show.
We have not. Not I. See, this is what's tough for me. Is like, I'm like, I don't know if they mean that. Yeah, it's weird. So I think they did a weird job explaining the variants. I guess how far off you have to go. I guess what it's going to lead to, whatever it is. And by the time they were like, okay, we pruned Loki, but really all I like the idea of all we did was send him to this wasteland at the end of time. Right. I like that.
Yeah.
He finds the other four Lokis.
I thought, and then maybe... It was, yeah, many Lokis, but old Loki was really good. His sacrifice at the end of episode 5 was great.
When the Loki showed up that was like a bad Loki that had the vote for Loki shirt.
Yeah.
I don't think all the people with him were Lokis. I think they were all like lackeys.
Oh, okay. Cute.
Loki's lackeys.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get where you're going.
I mean, did you like speak that much? They were a little Loki.
Did you likey?
That's Loki. Offensive.
Lokis, lackeys?
Yes. Did you think they were Lokis or lackeys?
I thought they were all Lokis.
What do you think now?
Well, now they might be Lokis, lackeys.
Yeah, I think they're lackeys.
Judas Priest.
I thought there was some cool parts. I thought the sacrifice part was cool. Yeah. I thought there were some moments that made sense. I like the idea of them getting past the guard dog and getting into Kang's like temple or whatever it is, kingdom. And I liked him saying, I've been controlling this for all this time. Do you want to take over? All those ideas are kind of cool and mystical, but here's what I feel like. A, we never got a real clear picture of the world.
No.
We never really got a clear picture of what it is with variants, without variants. Do they kill them? If they prune them all and they're all in this wasteland, how come we only saw like 10 people total?
Right.
That's a little bit weird.
Well, I think the big guard dog is eating
all everyone. Of them?
Yeah. Everything at the end of time.
I think we never got a clear picture of that stuff. And then... And
so like the variant of Brad who doesn't like Jackass is running from that guard dog right now.
You like Jackass?
Shooting a firework out of his... Yeah.
That's how you're getting away. Well, that you don't like Jackass.
I've adapted at the end of time.
But then the idea of like, you don't get the payoff of what this means for the future.
Right.
I guess is by design.
Right.
But also kind of hurts the ending of the show.
Yes.
You don't even get the hint of what's happening.
No.
Let me get this right too. So by the logic of the show, someone discovered the multiverse. There were good versions and bad versions of people. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's Kang.
Yep.
By the way, which is the same as the Fantastic Four, zombie Fantastic Four multiverse thing. They were bad. So Kang started to trim all the other timelines, right? And now all the other timelines are going to run amok because the TVA is disbanded and he's disbanded.
Right.
Or is that right? Because they go back and the TVA is normal again.
Right. But with a different statue or something.
Oh, no, but Owen Wilson, it was a new TVA.
Yeah.
Owen Wilson didn't know who he was.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I thought there was a different statue.
It was Kang.
Yeah.
It was Kang was the statue as opposed to what?
The timekeepers, I think.
Yeah. So to me, I guess it's opening it up to be like, here's why the Spider-Man can be here.
There we go.
But in terms of the show, I don't know what the show is.
Right.
I'm going to say this out loud and it's going to hurt me to say this. If someone's like, oh, you can't watch Loki season 2, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Which sucks. I don't want to feel like that.
Yeah, I just want to see that jet ski moment.
I just didn't care that much about...
It's weird because, all right, in the movies, Loki went from bad guy, and eventually he kind of like, you know, he sacrificed himself. He tried to kill Thanos, whatever. He became an anti-hero. Mm-hmm. And then in his final moments, a hero. In the show, he doesn't go on that journey. He's just arrested with the Tesseract, and then he has his anti-hero to hero moment, like in episode 1, where he sees a video of his mother, and he's like, oh, I should be a good guy. And, you know, he's still kind of a scamp at the end of episode 2. Yeah, right. Exactly the same. Ducking through a door.
Yeah. Enemas.
Yep, almost the same.
Yeah.
And, but like, I it feels... It feels cheap. To me.
It's hard because let's say me and you are writing this.
Yeah.
And let's say there's a third writer in here. Let's call him
Hey Rarrington.
And Hey Rarrington is so dumb.
We've been hanging out too much tonight.
Yeah, right. Let's say he's here and he's like, let's just have him be a good guy at the end of episode 1. I will say though. Can you really say he's a good guy and then the whole time he's trying to take down the TVA?
Right. Well, it sucks because he's like going after power.
He is going after power.
Yeah.
And he's also going against the people who are trying to catch him and he's helping a bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
Like to me, honestly, Has Loki really been a bad guy since Avengers?
Well, he took over Odin's throne, but that all that stuff happened off screen.
Yeah. And it didn't, it wasn't like he's hurting people. It was just like he wants power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then what? Thor 2, he's a good guy.
He helps, but he does some backstabbing in that one as well.
Big backstabbing?
Yeah, I mean, Loki-sized backstabbing.
Thor 3, good guy.
I don't even remember.
Ragnarok.
Honestly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gets on the ship, like, changes his mind, right?
I think he's just a good guy. Isn't he just... He's Jeff Goldblum, then Thor comes, and he's kind of a dick.
He has to team up with Thor against... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, what? Endgame, good guy?
I mean, briefly, yeah.
I don't think he's been a bad guy since Avengers.
All right.
Right?
Yeah.
He hasn't been an antagonist or a villain.
Anti-hero.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Anti-hero. So I will say that. So there's that in that camp. And also, I don't know if he's a clear hero this whole time. He's supposed to do a thing, and the whole thing is him not doing it and lying to them and running away.
Right.
I was really into it. I think episodes 1 and 2, the circus one.
Yep.
Them going, yeah, I really liked that stuff. I really liked the technology ideas.
Yep.
The only thing I wish there was something more clear about is what is the master, the main timeline? What's it called? The true timeline?
Master timeline, right?
What is the master timeline? How do you know what's going off of it? What are the rules of going off of it? Does it make a clone or does it make a second person? Do you kill, like, all these different things that were kind of touched upon and not clearly.
Okay.
And the thing is, the show hinged on that stuff.
Right.
It's not even like, well, it's not that important. It's like, no. The reveal of the show is that they're all variants.
Right.
And that they thought they were getting rid of the variants, but they are variants. And I mean, part of the show is supposed to be the free will thing, but we never even see what the deal is with Sylvie.
Right.
We never even see where she came from. And it's also like, so wait a minute, there's a master timeline. If you're born outside of that timeline, you're a variant?
Right. That seems weird to me.
Like Alligator Loki. See, here's a big question. So we were talking about the master timeline as if you veer off your main storyline.
Right.
But Alligator Loki, Sylvie, the girl Loki, young Loki, old Loki, those people didn't veer off of Loki's timeline. They're not him.
Nope.
They just had their own timeline. So what does that mean? The Alligator Loki is born and he's a variant?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I'm with you.
This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about in terms of like making a viewer feel like they understand the story and understand the world.
Right.
This is where Westworld season 1 was like 100% perfect.
Yep.
And Jurassic Park is 100% perfect. And why I think by the end of this, some people probably didn't feel connected to it.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, even if you don't think about it, it takes you out of it.
Yeah.
So that was my problem with it, I think. And I hope that they... See, that's a really weird... Did you think about this before? Like, where did these other ones come from?
I thought about the idea of, oh, what did this girl do to get, you know, pruned? To get the TVA to come after her.
And if she's 35...
And she was like 10 when she was taken.
So what, for 10 years, what, it was part of the main timeline?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right, yeah. Because how can that be part of the main timeline? And then also...
Loki's story.
Tom Hiddleston be part of the main storyline. So
this is what I mean.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean? If anyone knows, write chuckandbrad@gmail.com.
If you're Loki and you have a clue, please tell us.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
If Sylvie and Loki exist until at least she's 10 years old, how are they both part of the main timeline? And if they're not, why did it take until she was 10 for her to be pruned? And if she's not... What world is she living in?
Right.
Who is she with? Who's raising her?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. This is kind of what I'm talking about in terms of not feeling comfortable with it. But I think that stuff really hurt my appreciation.
Yeah.
It's weird. Don't you feel like that would never happen in the Spider-Man movies?
I hope not.
Come on. Don't drop the ball, Marvel. I said when Endgame came out, they juggled all this shit so well for 23 movies over 11 years or 10 years at that time. You know, if they go off the rails now, they still did something unprecedented.
Right.
And who knows? And since then, like, I firmly stand behind WandaVision. I think Falcon and Winter Soldier as just a TV show was a fun action show. No big problems.
Right.
But man, Loki and Black Widow have kind of hurt my faith a little bit. I'm going to be honest.
All right.
In a way that I didn't expect.
Okay.
You feel the same way or no?
No, I think, you know, Taika is working on the next Thor, Love and Thunder. Mm-hmm. So I have all the confidence in the world in that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Shang-Chi will be good. Probably similar to Black Widow, like where my expectations are like, oh, I hope it'll be a fun action movie. I'm really hoping that Spider-Man just murders me. Just like
me too.
In a good way.
Yeah,
me too. A good kind of murder.
Me too.
And that's kind of where what I'm hoping with. You know.
Yeah.
Nobody bats 1,000.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just weird that these two happen at the same time.
Yeah. That's all.
But all right. Well, that's it. I'm glad we did a whole new episode of actual pop culture stuff, and we did a lot of listener mails.
Yes. More listener mails to come. And of course, if you want to send us an email, chuckandbrad@gmail.com, or find the email link through chuckandbradpodcast.com.
Yes.
Happy to answer it.
And also, if you're anywhere near Rhode Island at all, come on down Sunday, August 15th, The Dark Knight, Bradley Drawn, live at the Comedy Connection. It's going to be a really fun. chuckandbradpodcast.com will have all the info and tickets.
Oh, my drawings are so bad.
And we're going to have a great time.
Yep.
That's it, man.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. We do appreciate it. That's all I've got.
So I'll log up.
Deuces.